seriously want.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
After the hour 12, you know what that means. The Mac Daddy is back, Dominic Carter.
Good afternoon.
If you notice outside, the Hawk is talking. I mean, it is talking out there. It was a temporary reprieve right as we broke into the weekend, 30s, 40s, even hit 60. And then all of a sudden, here we go again.
Well, why do you have on your coat now?
I'm cold.
You're still cold.
Yeah, I had to do Good Day Early Call New York on Channel 5, as I do Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from about 4:45 to 4:55 in the morning.
What time do you get up for that?
About 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock,
yeah,
okay.
I'm out the door.
Okay.
And when I got back to the apartment to have Anthony there, naturally with Nancy, man, I was cold. My feet, my dogs weren't barking, man. They were frozen. And I got boots on. So I'm saying to myself, what is wrong here? Took the blankets, put it on me. There was the electric blanket. And the rescue cats decided they were going to house the electric blanket because they were keeping warm. But it got me back on track. But, man, the Hawk was talking out there, Dominic.
Do your cats get in bed with you the way my cat does?
Yes. Well, the last rescue cat we have is the little kitten. And you've seen pictures of him, Ajax, because he likes rubbing my beard. He likes rubbing up against my beard. And that he was a little kitten, maybe a week or two old, when Nancy rescued him in Sunset Park because his mother had decided to remove him from the litter because he was a little runt. And you know, that's Darwinian. That's the way, unfortunately, animals do it. If the mother who can't feed all the kittens, particularly in this brutal kind of winter, makes a decision in her mind, I can barely take care of the four kittens that I brought into the world. I got to get rid of the runt. And you know what happens. The runt gets taken and then put to the side and then eventually expires. So Nancy swept him up, brought him to the house, is nursing him. So he's the number four rescue cat. You know, it starts with the Siamese cat, Hercules. He's the patriarch. And then Apollo, who you like, he is the tuxedo cat, mostly black with a few spots of white.
So wait a minute. Why would I like tuxedo necessarily?
Because he's from East New York. We rescued him from a kill shelter.
So you have a thug cat.
Oh, total thug. This guy would do home invasions. This guy would cap you right in your ass.
If
he had a tool. Oh, yeah, he's got that East New York attitude, like right in your face. Always up to no good. Always starting trouble, but he's tough.
And Hercules is his name.
No, that's Apollo. That's okay. The tuxedo
Apollo's
cat.
The tough one.
Right. And then you got Athena, which actually I'm partly responsible for rescuing because when we were making the rounds with the Guardian Angel Animal Protection Group checking up on the cat colonies, it started to rain and Nancy said, well, okay, the cats are going to already be seeking cover from the rain. Let's turn back. I said, no, let's make a last stop. And there was Athena again. A kitten, she had an infection in her eye. You could see that she had been removed from the other cats. As part of that Darwinian thing, and Nancy swept up Athena and then just started nursing her back to health. And she's got a tail like a squirrel has. I've never seen a tail so big on a cat. And she's up to mischief, too. This cat likes to sleep in the litter box. The litter box. So I'm up this morning, right, getting ready.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, so I'm getting ready to go to Good Day Early Call New York Channel 5. So naturally, I run into the bathroom. And who's sleeping in the litter box but Athena? And she's enticing little Ajax, the little runt kitten, to get in the litter box with her and sleep there.
Well, was the litter box clean? Does she like to sleep in a clean litter box, or it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter. But, you know, Nancy changes the litter box constantly, so it's never really overloaded. But you know,
cats are very clean animals.
Oh, yeah.
Very clean.
Oh, yeah. Except Athena, who likes to sleep in a litter box. So that just gives you an idea of some of the mishigosh that goes on.
Now, wait a minute. You watch the cat sleep in the litter box?
Well, I'm sitting there on the porcelain palace there, right? I mean, I would have gone in the litter box if that was the option. I'm sitting on the porcelain palace, copping a squat. And I'm saying, what the hell is this? These two cats are sleeping in the litter box. I got all other places to sleep. But anyway, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do the broadcast to all of you with Dominic Carter in the house today, I have a dilemma, Dominic.
What's the dilemma?
Yesterday was the first time I had a chance to see my two youngest sons, Carter, age 9, Hunter, age 6, because they hadn't seen me since the operation.
Ah, okay.
They were traumatized because they had actually seen me before the operation in my last visit crawl into a fetal position when I couldn't move off the ground. So, you know, Anthony was a little more used to that. He's 14 now. He was able to handle it as my oldest son. The two younger ones weren't. So their mother made the decision, you know, let's wait until you're in good shape, because they still have this image of you on the ground, you know, crying in pain and them feeling helpless to do anything about their daddy. So I show up yesterday. Oh, they couldn't have been more happy. They were fatoots. But we're sitting around as they're playing the video games because, you know, I'm watching them. And they turn to me and goes, and Carter, the older one, goes, Daddy, that beard, it's got to go. And then Hunter chimes in and goes, yeah. So we posted, if you go to the Curtis Sliwa Facebook page, you'll see both my youngest sons tugging at my beard. And they're telling me that I got to shave this beard off. And in fact, Hunter, it's going to be 7 at the end of February. He goes, Daddy, I want you to shave that beard off before my birthday.
So wait, why don't they like the beard?
I don't know.
It gives you a distinguished look.
I know, but what do I do now? This race that we have, this vote as to whether the beard should stay or go, it's like neck and neck. You should really, I mean, thousands of people have responded on both Facebook, and they've also responded on Twitter, Curtis WABC, and it's neck and neck. But now, boy, this is pressure. My two youngest sons have said, hey, the beard's got to go. So tomorrow I'll put the question to my son when I see him later on tonight, Anthony, whether he thinks the beard should stay or go. Now, what do I do if all three sons say the beard's got to go? Do I defy them and go with the listeners, many of whom want me to keep the beard? So far, the vote is in favor of keeping the beard, but it's very close, as opposed to not keeping the beard.
What does your heart tell you to do?
Oh, I hate this beard, man. It's scratchy. It's like I got jock itch, you know, on my face.
Well, you got jock itch.
Right.
On your face.
Yeah, I want to put Desinex in my jock strap here and then put a jock strap right around my chin here. This beard is driving me nuts. But I did make this solemn oath to all of our listeners that I would do whatever the results of the social media indicated.
Wait a minute. Did you just say you want to put a jock strap on your face?
Yeah, with Desinex in it.
With Desinex.
Yeah, because I remember my father, Chester.
Oh.
He had a problem with athlete's foot, so he would put the Desinex thing in his athletic socks.
Right.
And it'd be like a plume in the house. And then he put his feet in. And he, like, lived with Desinex. So I figured if it worked for my father on his feet, his athlete's feet, maybe it will work on this beard if I got to keep it, you know, where I put a jock strap on with the Desinex there.
Mm.
I think it would work.
Interesting.
What do I do, ladies and gentlemen? Do I defy my sons? Or do I not defy all of you, as I have gone on record as saying, if you all vote for me to keep the beard, I have to keep the beard. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Now, Dominic Carter, today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yes, it is. Happy King Day to you.
Federal holiday, as it should be. And normally, you would be in the House of Hate of Al Slim Shady Sharpton.
Who says that I wasn't already at the House of Justice.
So you were at the National Action Hate Network on 145th there.
I was at the House of Justice this morning, yes.
How is the heat? How is the heat there?
How's the heat?
Yeah, you know, did they have heat, hot water there? I mean, was it warm?
Of course they have heat and hot water. What type of question is that?
Well, the reason I ask is nearby, if you cross the bridge over into the Bronx, you see, as I sent to you, two of the public housing locations of NYCHA that you grew up in. Patterson in the South Bronx, right off, I think, 145th, 146th.
Right, 143rd and Morris is
right.
Where part of the South Bronx. Right.
And then further north, the Throgs Neck NYCHA complex. Both I've sent you flyers from, in which the people are without heat or hot water. And in fact, at the Patterson Housing Projects, the part-time mayor, the dope from Park Slope, who knows nothing about NYCHA, he had a yellow school bus downstairs. He called it a warming bus with no toilet. And so he says to the residents there in these flyers that were posted in the hallways, if you want to stay nice and warm and toasty, just go to the warming bus, cop a squat there, and maybe eventually we'll get heat and hot water returned to you. Because, you know, right now, I'm protesting the major five oil companies for burning fossil fuel. So what, NYCHA residents have to be without the burning of fossil fuel to stay warm?
Wait, are you serious about this bus?
Yes. Yeah.
You're not joking?
I'm not joking. Oh, no, Camilla Price.
So wait a minute. So you're telling me the mayor of New York City, of this great city, his solution, his temporary solution to a heat problem in housing units that the city is responsible for,
yes,
is to put a yellow school bus out front?
He calls it a warming bus. In fact, let's go to the audio tape. Camilla Price, who ran against Ruben Diaz Jr. to become the next borough president of the Bronx, she lost. She was on the Reform Party line, of which I'm the New York State chairman. But she lives in public housing. She has organized public housing residents over the years. Listen to what she has to say of what they did in the project, the Patterson houses that you used to live in.
How do you take people, residents, out of a NYCHA and put them in a bus and say, this is the warming bus? That's what it was called, the warming bus. And tell them to go to the warming bus at 300 East 143rd Street. So they had to come out of a cold home to walk in the cold air to get to a warming bus. So after you warm up, you got to go back out into the cold air to go back in the cold home. So you're never going to be warm.
Yeah, not only that, but when you got to go to the toilet, you got to go back out into the cold, right? There's no toilet on a school bus. We know that. It's not like one of these casino buses, you know, in which they have all the full amenities. You got to get the toilet in the back. You know, they got a nice place to sit. I could see that as an alternative. But a school bus? Come on.
Can you imagine that?
And what was that famous song that we grew up with? Remember the double Dutch bus? So maybe the mayor was suggesting that it go round and round, you know, the Patterson Housing Projects or the Throgs Neck Projects or Soundview Projects or Castle Hill Projects, you know, on the double Dutch bus. So you can raise the roof, right?
You're in a great mood today.
By the way, did Al Slim Shady Sharpton mention that about how NYCHA residents that I believe, you know, everybody likes this. What would Martin Luther King Jr. have done if he were alive? I believe he would have kept representing the interests of the poor and the impoverished NYCHA residents. By the way,
I think there's no doubt about that.
Most of whom pay rent. A lot of people think, oh, you live on the projects, you don't pay any rent. No. It's subsidized, but they pay rent.
And some of them pay close to market rent.
Yes.
That's one of the worst
misnomers, kept
secrets. That's right. About public housing. Many people that live in public housing pay $1,000 a month.
Yeah. Now, there are some are fully subsidized.
Right.
But then again, there are others who pay part of the rent. You know, there's a formula that they have. But if you were to ask the average New Yorker, hey, what do you think that person who lives in that NYCHA housing project there, Bayview in Canarsie, where I grew up, where the CEO, the founder of Starbucks grew up, they would say, oh, it's free. You know, that's why they live in public housing. It's free. No, it's not free.
Not free at all.
And the federal government pays 90% of all the expenses. The city only kicks in 10%. So imagine you have decided you're going to war against Donald Trump as the mayor. You know, you're part of the resistance. And you're not even going to pick up the phone and talk to Dr. Ben Carson, who grew up in the hood in Detroit, so he's familiar, and say, hey, what can we do? We got a problem here. Our units are falling apart. We don't have proper heat and hot water because our boilers are shot. What can we do to try to resolve this together in partnership? No, not even a phone call.
Well, how about the city of New York hire the boiler inspectors and repair people? They're at about half the operating capacity that they have. How about that? How about that, Mr. Mayor? Hire the boiler people, and the same way that you hold private landlords responsible,
yes,
and you come down on them with a ton of bricks,
yes,
why don't you do the same thing when it comes to the agencies that you're responsible for?
Oh, remember, it's typical of politicians. Do as I say, but not as I do.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Dominic Carter in the house. So we see that a flu wave is engulfing our country. Many people have been hospitalized with symptoms of influenza. Some people have died or been seriously sickened by it. Tomorrow we'll talk about this because I'm not taking a flu shot. I will not.
I don't either.
Right. We'll discuss that because now they're really putting pressure. Health care officials, you know, locally, regionally, nationally, that you got to get this flu shot. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But imagine you're in a NYCHA housing complex. You have no heat and hot water since Christmas. The likelihood is if you haven't gotten a cold or the flu before, this being below freezing weather is going to, let's face it, exacerbate that. Anyway, let's go to the phones. First up in the queue is calling from Staten Island. That's Giuseppe, Joey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Joe?
Hey, Curtis. I'm glad to hear you're feeling better, first of all.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say I'm a landlord in the city, and it's amazing to me, and it's disgraceful what this mayor is doing. He'll even give people lawyers to fight with us if we don't provide the perfect amenities of heat, hot water, and everything that people are supposed to have. I kill myself every day trying to get everything done for these people. Even if they don't pay or they pay late, we're still held up to a certain standard. And this mayor would have locked me up for doing what he's doing.
No doubt about it. But, Joe, are you making a profit?
No, I'm not, actually. We're breaking even because they raised the city taxes on the properties, and the costs are going up and up and up. And this is just a regularity. Every
All right,
year,
so, Joe, a person who isn't in the field of real estate and property development or property ownership, they would say, why don't you just sell it? This is a hot marketplace now. There will be more than enough possible investors to come in and buy that property from you.
Well, Curtis, as you know, if you sell these properties, it's a double-edged sword. Once you sell them in capital gains, they take it away from you. So you're heavily taxed while you own the property, and then you're exuberantly taxed as soon as you sell the property.
But Joe, how about one set of rules? It's simply if you don't provide heat, you already know the city is going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. If they can't get a hold of you, they're going to have a repairman go in and make the repairs and build you twice or three times what it costs. But yet when it comes to public housing, see no evil, hear no evil.
Well, Dominic, I have a solution. From now on, if I have a problem with heating in my properties, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send a minivan and park it out front of the house, and I'm going to call it the warming minivan.
Yes, the warming minivan for your tenant. This, when Camilla Price told me about this and then sent the documentation, the flyers that NYCHA itself put up in the hallways of the Patterson Housing Projects, Dominic, where you grew up in the South Bronx, I said, no, this is surreal. This can't be a yellow school bus to warm up. I understand, at least it's something when you got nothing, but you couldn't do better than that.
It borderline's ridiculous.
Yeah, no. And again, today, you know, his comrade Bill de Blasio going around saying he's in solidarity with poor and impoverished people, lower middle class people, you know, he's part of the resistance. And he can't even take care of the people that he's responsible from, that he doesn't even pay the bills for. 90% of these bills are paid for by the feds.
And that's why the chair of the Housing Authority, it's nothing but one big patronage mill. Yes. But you have to start with the chair, and she should be fired immediately.
Absolutely. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC.
Hey, Curtis and Dominic, how you guys doing?
Oh, actually, I'm having a good day here today. Good day. I'm feeling a lot better since that operation.
I'm happy to hear that. Listen, Curtis, I grew up in Canarsie, you know, down not too far from the Glenwood housing projects. Really well run in the early 70s.
Sure.
Yeah, you remember that? You remember it.
Oh, yeah, right across from South Shore High School.
Right, right. So listen, Curtis and Dominic, why didn't anyone get in contact with the New York City Public Advocate? Did that person do anything, by the way? Aren't they supposed to? What I think we should do is give out the phone number. I think on your radio show, give out the phone number of the New York City Public Advocate. I don't think anyone calls the New York City Public Advocate for anything.
No, because it's a placebo position. It has no power. It does not have investigative authority. It can't issue subpoenas. All this one does now, Letitia James, as de Blasio did, as Mark Green did, is just use the position to launch a run for mayor at taxpayers' expense. They are powerless. They do nothing but hold press conferences and complain. But there's Scott Stringer. He has power. The city council, they have some power. And then there's Andrew Evilized Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, who hates de Blasio, but then again, if he attacks him here, and there's going to be blowback as to, and what have you done lately for NYCHA housing residents?
I agree with you on the public advocate, but they do, from time to time, highlight some important issues with their, let's call them, studies. Or why are you looking at me like that? It amounts to basically a press conference.
Well,
every now and then they do focus
on
some legitimate.
You want me to do a study on how they're not caring for the homeless in the subways? Just freaking ride the subway. You don't have to do a subway. Hold your nose, get into a subway car, look around at the emotionally disturbed people and the homeless who are stuck in that, and you don't have to do a study. All you got to do is pull out your iPhone, your smartphone, film it, and then publicize.
I know we have news headlines coming up, but yes, answer this for me, because yes, every time I get on the subway, it makes me want to pull the very few hair that I have out. I know that they have lawyers like Norman Siegel and so on that, yes, fight for them. But why are people allowed to get on the subway and play their music? It's a way of raising money or getting people to give you.
Sure.
And play it extremely loud. Why is that legal?
Because right now the focus is if you drop a gum wrapper, they're going to fine you. But if you copulate, fornicate, if you take a dump, if you play loud music, they're going to ignore you. You know, it's just that Comrade de Blasio has told the cops, don't enforce the regulations. Do not enforce the regulations. But if you drop a gum wrapper now on the platform, because they've taken all the trash cans away, hit him with a fine, $125 fine, because we need the revenue. Oofa!
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
With their Swedish flatbread, their lutefisk fiskeballs. You know, it's too bad the president didn't lump in Swedes and Finns with the Norwegians and wonder why they're not coming to America to want to live here and work here and be productive here.
Interesting. I'll just leave it at that.
Yo, we're going to discuss that in the next hour. But this is an interesting situation that unfolded. H&M, which, as you know, has a lot of stores here in the tri-state area and throughout America. And it's a global company. It's like IKEA, the furniture firm. Very liberal, very progressive normally. A lot of benefits for its workers. You know, they'll pay for your college education. You know, they do what Swedes do.
Right. So what was that one more time? The company is very, what was that term?
Liberal and
very
progressive.
Very liberal. Okay.
Towards its own employees. And also just its philosophy in terms of doing business. Because that's the nature of the Swedes. as it is about the Norwegians.
Before you continue.
Yes.
You do know in the black community.
Yes.
That at times we feel that liberals can be the worst racists ever.
Wait a second. You mean to tell me?
I just want you to understand going in.
I understand. But I know that you and Mrs. Carter.
Yes.
Well, with your family.
Yes.
Your daughter and son.
Yes.
Have probably gone to Red Hook and checked out that IKEA joint on the waterfront or.
Not in Red Hook, but a different
IKEA.
Along
the New Jersey Turnpike.
In Paramus.
Right. Across New Jersey Turnpike from the Newark Airport.
Yes.
They got an IKEA. And as you mentioned, in Paramus.
Yes.
And tell me you don't eat their Swedish meatballs that they're serving up? That they get free of charge?
I have never had their meatballs. I've been Seriously, I've been there. I had something to eat there, I think a hot dog, but I've never had their meatballs.
Well, you know, it's made out of reindeer meat.
Seriously?
No, I'm kidding. But anyway, the point is, it's a different kind of a company than a lot of American companies are.
But I'm not joking about, you ask any, go to any barbershop.
Yes.
You're crazy enough to do it.
Of course.
Any black barbershop.
I'll go in and ask for
when
a fade.
When a guy's getting a fade or a Caesar.
Yes.
And ask them about liberals and the black community.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes who is the worst racist out there.
Okay. The problem here is that HM, its corporate headquarters is in Sweden. Not in Gothenburg, but in Stockholm, the capital. And they came up with this ad with a hoodie that read, coolest monkey in the jungle. And they had a young African immigrant boy modeling it who is a resident of Stockholm. His mother, in fact, is a stage mom there in Sweden. He's done a lot of ads. You know, he's well known. So naturally, people around the world see these ads and they say, this young black boy... is wearing a hoodie shirt that says coolest monkey in the jungle. Man, that is racist. That is absolutely racist. So naturally, HM gets the blowback and says, yeah, I guess this didn't make it, this made it through the filter without it being checked. You're right. We're pulling the ad. We're not promoting this campaign. In South Africa over the weekend, even though HM is no longer selling this garb or promoting this garb, some of the local residents use that as an excuse to burn down an H&M store and loot it. But the mother, who is 100% black, when I talk in mixed race, so that an immigrant from Africa, 100% black, has brought her son to many photo shoots. She said, Terry Mango, she said she didn't support the backlash over the ad. In fact, she said, I'm the mom. And this is one of hundreds of outfits my son has modeled. Stop crying wolf all the time. It's an unnecessary issue here. Get over it. Hey, she says, if I bought that jumper and put it on him and posted it on my pages, would that make me rapist? Interesting that his black mother comes to the defense and says, no biggie. Now, does it mean we've evolved?
It's not interesting. It's really simple. It's called a paycheck. What do you expect for her to say when they're paying her and her son in this campaign? And point number two, she's from Sweden, correct?
Yeah. She's a Swedish citizen.
In all likelihood, she has not experienced racism the way that American blacks have. So she would have no clue whatsoever why people are so upset about this.
Well, I've been in Sweden. I've had guardian angels in Sweden. They can be pretty racist towards blacks and other immigrants, increasingly as more are coming in from North Africa with the migrant wave, you know, that's affected all of Europe. You've got some racists there. But you're right. For the most part,
but Curtis,
Sweden does not pulsate on a racist vibe.
It's King Day. And we're looking at an ad with a black child that says on the hoodie, coolest monkey in the jungle.
Mm.
Come on, man.
All right. Well, let's find out from our many listeners out there. The mother's wishes were that the campaign would continue.
Because she wanted the paycheck.
I understand. But she said she didn't have any problem with it. In South Africa, even though H&M reneged, pulled the campaign, pulled all the apparel, they decided to burn down a store. Where does it end? Where does it continue to go? And as Dominic mentioned, particularly on this, the national holiday in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Rich, who I believe is calling from Ridgewood. Welcome to WABC, Richie Rich.
I love you guys. But Dominic, come on. It's going to be brown people. If a brown person calls you a monkey, is he racist? Even though his skin is brown, if you don't consider yourself the object of conflict here, if you don't consider yourself a monkey, you're not going to think it's racist, and that's what the mom was saying.
I hear you, Rich. Rich, wait, let me flip this on you, Rich. I'm curious in what you have to say to this. Now, LeBron James tweeted out he was opposed to this, the basketball player, and he tweeted out a young man with a crown on. That is more a symbol of if you want to connect with people to send. What my question to you, Rich, is this. What was one of the main ways historically that white slave owners would use to keep blacks down? Was it not by referring to them as monkeys?
You could call somebody a mud race, you could call them by
okay,
the color.
But Rich, you didn't answer voters. But Rich, you didn't answer the question.
Yes, it was.
So historically, if the word monkey has been a code word to disparage blacks, to put blacks down, this is not something that should be on a hoodie. Or why not have a white child wear the hoodie in the ad? And it raises the other question, Curtis.
Yes.
This is exactly why. Wait, hold on, Rich. This is exactly why, Curtis. This is exactly why you need blacks in the room when they're making an advertising business. Because a black staffer would have said, excuse me, I don't think this is necessarily a good idea. A black person would have seen this coming a million miles away. This is exactly why African Americans historically fight to have blacks in the advertising business.
Now, you may have remembered a while back, so a few years ago, New York Post, which has the great political commentary cartoon on page 6. They're always great cartoons.
And they got into a lot of trouble for their cartoons.
Yeah. Remember, they had a picture of a monkey that had been shot. I guess it was by a police officer. I'm not really sure of all the details. I'm having a little bit of a Ronald Reagan
dementia. Yeah, I think that's
here.
The one they apologized for.
Right.
But go ahead.
And then Spike Lee said we should boycott the Post, followed by Al Slim Shady Sharpton, your homeboy. These boycotts never work. Come on, you know, boycott the newspaper. They never work. But I remember the outrage to that. And remember, the cartoonist for page 6 is always trying to push the envelope, as you know, because they're always trying to be cutting edge. Because remember, they don't have words. They just get one shot with one picture. But you're right. They did apologize. And nobody burned down one of the New York Post newspaper boxes that sometimes you find throughout the tri-state area. 1-800-848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Call 54, Dominic Carter in the house. Let's go to Robert, first up in the queue, calling from Jersey. Welcome to WABC, Bobby.
Curtis, I'm so glad you're feeling better and sounding better. I hope nothing more than you to become 100%. But I just want to let you know, I was born in 1956, born and raised by my grandmother after my father and mother's divorce. And make a long story short, I dated black girls. I was so in love with this one black girl. She was in love with me. I broke her family's heart along with hers after 6 years because back then it was not acceptable. I mean, I'm talking back in 1973, 74.
Sure.
But make a long story short, I live in Dumont, New Jersey, and I go to Popeye's in Bergenfield on Teaneck Road. I'm sure you're familiar with the area.
Oh, very familiar.
I have a lot of friends there. Originally, they asked me to... You want this to go, of course. You want this to go. I said, no, I want to sit here. Curtis, I would be the only white person sitting there at my age right up to now. I have so many friends there. I don't believe in racism. I'm not a racist.
So wait a second. Are you basically saying that whites prefer KFC, the Colonel, as opposed to
Popeyes?
I like Popeyes?
Popeyes in Teaneck, New Jersey on Teaneck.
Yeah, no. I know. I've had that experience when I was in New Orleans organizing. Popeyes is big there. That's where they started
down in
Louisiana.
But they've asked me to leave the first one or two times. You don't want to eat this here, do you?
But Robert.
They ask you to leave.
Robert, I'm glad you enjoy Popeyes, but... And it's great that you've dated women of color, but you've never walked a day in your life in an African-American shoes. So how would you know about racism?
I'm in Washington Heights all the time with my job and everything else. I don't believe in racism. I trust everybody and everyone.
No, I'm glad that you don't. That's a great thing. But how would you know?
How would I know about what, Curtis?
Dominic, about racism. If you're not a man of color, how would you know?
Because I'm white and I adore life and black people as well. Black people as well. They've been good to me my whole life, Curtis.
I'm telling you what your problem is, Robert. You went into that Popeyes there as the only white guy, and you ordered, obviously, chicken and the biscuit. Yeah. You didn't order what I always order, which is the red beans and rice.
Mm.
I love Popeye's red beans and rice.
I thought you were a McDonald's guy.
Well, I am. But, I mean, when I see a Popeye's, I actually prefer their red beans and rice to their various fried chicken products and all the ancillary
you
things.
You like the spicy chicken or the regular chicken?
Oh, love the spicy chicken. Got to have that spicy chicken. But that's not my favorite of Popeyes. It's the red beans and rice. Oftentimes, I've gone and got the big canister of red beans and rice, and I dog it there with the, what do we call that? Well, I forget. Nah, not the mashed potatoes and Cajun gravy. With the muffins.
Ah, the muffins.
That ain't it. The muffins. Why did I draw a blank on that? Although I never got kicked out of a Popeyes before because I said I'm Brutus to your Popeye.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Six minutes after the hour of one, Dropkick Murphy singing the classic, Which Side Are You On? And as we are celebrating the federal holiday honoring Martin Luther King Jr., the president has really set it off based on his comments Thursday when he summoned a bipartisan committee from the Senate, which consisted of Republican Lindsey Graham, Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, to try to resolve the DACA situation with all the immigration security measures that he wants. Walk into a room in which there were Republican congressmen there, led by Kevin McCarthy, who are no fans of DACA. And so Graham and Durbin were a little perplexed, like, gee whiz, how could this be a bipartisan discussion when you got like six other House Republicans here who want the wall and don't want DACA kids to stay? Okay, no problem. And then apparently in the course of their discussions back and forth, the president said something. Now, you've seen this before.
Yes, no doubt about it.
Particularly when it comes to identifying somebody who committed the crime that you were all in the same bodega or grocery store with when they came in with a gun on and then robbed everybody. And you get conflicting eyewitness accounts of what the person looked like, what he had in his hand and such. And cops are used to sorting out with that and investigators because, you know, there's fear, there's fright involved. So they say, wow, sometimes you black out, you get traumatized. I understand that. But is the president such a force to deal with that when he's in a meeting with educated men and women as much as I despise them, they are educated, that they're all sitting in a room and they all come to different conclusions of what the president says. Now, the president, let's face it, he doesn't mince his words. This is one president. It's not like Barack Obama with the 7-second sound delay. And at times he's like, you could see he's lurching. He's searching for the right word.
It's called thinking.
Right. But still, he doesn't want to offend anybody. This president, hey, shoots from the hip. It's a gut reaction. That's why a lot of his supporters like him. They say it's refreshing.
Shoots from the hip on certain topics.
Right, right. Okay, so what did the president say? People, Dick Durbin, the U.S. Senator from Illinois, said, oh, he said people from Haiti, El Salvador, and African nations, why are they coming here from those bovine organite holes? I am not allowed by management to say what the word is, but bovine organite is excrement. So you can figure it out from there. So Dick Durbin, sticking by his guns, he was sitting right next to the president, says, that's what he said. The president didn't say anything at first, didn't tweet out anything. But then the following day said, no, I did not say that, but I did use harsh language. So then the president yesterday, while standing with his sock puppet, McCarthy, boy, did he look like a schmuck there. The look on Congressman McCarthy's face was like, I'd rather not be here. As the president was asked, are you a racist?
No, I'm not a racist. I am the least racist person you have ever interviewed. That I can tell you.
Okay, now, Dominic, he answered the question. Good. He didn't duck it like he had the day before when he signed the proclamation honoring Martin Luther King Jr. in front of many black leaders. Okay, that's good. But why didn't members of the Fourth Estate ask him, well, if you didn't use that term, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. What was your harsh language? What exactly did you say? Didn't hear that question. So then, naturally, on the Sunday shows, the two U.S. senators who at first said that they had problems remembering exactly what the president had said.
What a coincidence.
We're now suddenly there, like lens lice, ready to take on all comers. There was Senator Cotton of Arkansas who would like to replace Pompeo as a CIA director if Pompeo becomes the Secretary of State. He lusts for that position. Has a very good track record, having served our country in both Afghanistan and Iraq, and seems like a stand-up guy, although I disagree with some of his politics. But this is what he had to say about sitting in that room with the president.
You were in the room where it happens. So you're saying in that room you didn't hear any of this sort of lumping everybody together. Is that what you're saying?
I did not hear derogatory comments about individuals or persons, no.
Okay. So this sentiment is totally phony as well, that is attributed to him.
Yes.
Okay. And then he went on.
I didn't hear it, and I was sitting no further away from Donald Trump than Dick Durbin was. And I know what Dick Durbin has said about the president's repeated statements is incorrect.
He's calling Dick Durbin a liar, let's face it. But why, again, didn't his inquisitor, the questionnaire, just say, okay, if he didn't say that, the president has admitted to using harsh language. Senator Cotton, do you recall what that harsh language was? So this way we can compare everybody's notes to see who's truly lying here.
And do you think a fellow Republican is going to say what that harsh language was?
Well,
now, Curtis, you're someone from the hood, from the street. Do you think that a fellow Republican would acknowledge what the president said?
There's two reasons why they might not. Let's look at Lindsey.
We know they would not.
I know, but let's look at Lindsey Graham, who had been chastised repeatedly during the Republican presidential primary campaign by this president, who even gave out his cell phone number, and suddenly has become a very good friend, goes golfing with the president, and has suddenly defended him many times. But Lindsey Graham, without mentioning the specificity of what the president said, said that he scolded President Donald Trump for his reported bovine organite hole comment. All right, he was the closest to approach that. The reason I believe a lot of the Republicans are not going to take on the president is because they themselves have used similar language before when speaking publicly on this issue, as Lindsey Graham had on the floor of the Senate.
how many security people we have along the Canadian border. I doubt it's 21,000. Why are we okay up there and not okay to the south? The tale of two borders. Why is one a problem and the other's not? Because Canada is a place where people like to stay.
Norway.
They like Canada. We like Canada. We love to have them visit. They want to go home because it's a nice place. The people coming across the southern border live in hellholes. They don't like that. They want to come here. Our problem is we can't have everybody in the world who lives in a hellhole coming to America.
Okay. He didn't use bovine organite hole, but that's close enough. Now, guess who chastised him on the floor of the U.S. Senate on a public microphone that everybody heard? The person you would never have thought. Jeff, I can't remember Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, meeting with him, Sessions, our attorney general.
I think my colleague doesn't mean to suggest that while there's poverty in Mexico in some really poor areas, it's not a hellhole. It has some great things going on in Mexico. We're proud of the people of Mexico. And it does have some difficult areas, as I know you know.
So you see how some Republicans would be damned if they do, damned if they don't, because they themselves have used similar language in describing the conditions where some of the people coming to America live.
They are facing enormous pressure from the White House to toe the party line and deny knowledge of hearing this comment.
Would it not be better if they were all asked by your colleagues, okay, I accept the fact you, Cotton, and Perdue said he didn't say that. What did he say? Then Graham, what did he say? Mr. President, what did you say? McCarthy, what did he say? And in fact, here's the one who was really in a rope-a-dope. The brand new Homeland Security Director who replaced General Kelly when he became the Chief of Staff for the Trump administration. Listen to how she had to worm around Chris Wallace of the Fox News Channel's inquisition.
Secretary, you were in that meeting in the Oval Office. Did the president say that?
I don't recall him saying that exact phrase. I think he has been clear, and I would certainly say undoubtedly the president will continue to use strong language when it comes to this issue because he feels very passionate about it.
It seems to me you were in the meeting when these comments were made. I can understand you either saying they were said or they were not said. It is pretty shocking language. And to say I don't recall seems implausible. If the president of the United States used the word blank hole, talking about countries in the Oval Office, or didn't say it, I would know.
I understand the question. It was an impassioned conversation. I don't recall that specific phrase being used. That's all I can say about that.
Okay, so why then, as good a questioner as Chris Wallace is, didn't he follow up and say, okay, if you say you can't recall that, and the president has admitted to using harsh language, what, Madam Secretary, was that harsh language? And then if she says, I can't remember, then clearly we have a problem on the Hill because a lot of these folks are suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's.
But why would Dick Durbin go before the cameras and just make this up? It's a reasonable assumption that the president made these comments. And the second question becomes, why is it with this president in particular, it always amounts to a he said, she said, who's telling the truth and who's lying? Why is it? Same situation with Comey. Why is it with our president now in the White House, it's a matter of did he say it or didn't he say it?
Okay, and the president said, well, from now on, I'll just have to record all conversations and have it on record. Okay, well, there was a recorded conversation by the Wall Street Journal of him over the weekend. Wall Street Journal, which, like the New York Post, has been very favorable towards the Trump administration. And there was a question of whether he said I'd or I, you know, it's a small thing. President broke. He went crazy. He said the Wall Street Journal is lying. So the Wall Street Journal says, no, our tape says you said this. Then Trump said, no, my tape said you said. So even when you tape a conversation with the president, he's still going to take issue with it. In fact, let's go to the audio tape. Remember, the Wall Street Journal has their copy. Imagine you have to put your iPhone down, and the president has his iPhone down from Chief Kelly, and then they compare it. And even now, the president is claiming a friendly journal Wall Street Journal, of which he doesn't have many, is lying.
With that being said, President Xi has been extremely generous with what he said. I like him a lot. I have a great relationship with him. As you know, I have a great relationship with Prime Minister Abe, Japan. And I probably have a very good relationship with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. I have relationships with people. I think you people are surprised.
So he took issue with that. I heard it clearly. Wall Street Journal was right. President was wrong. But because he got a little blowback from that, you know, I have a good relationship with Kim Jong mentally ill. He took umbrage to that and said, that's not what I said. Yes, Mr. President, that's what you said. You taped it and the Wall Street Journal taped it. And don't tell me you're going to say the Wall Street Journal is fake media. And on Wednesday, you'll be giving them one of your fake media awards.
I return to my original premise. Why is it with this president in particular? He says he didn't say something, but everybody else or others will say he did. Why does this consistently happen? Why?
Well, let's ask our listeners. Let's ask our listeners, because everything that seems to come from the president of late, whenever it's critical, fake news, they made it up, it's phony, it's not real. How is it in this case? The Wall Street Journal sits down with them, friendly newspaper. They tape it. Kelly tapes it. We just listen to it. And the president apparently can't hear what he said. Because in his own mind, he has convinced himself, I did not say that.
Remember before he became president, he said The Apprentice was number one, the most highly rated television show. Nothing was further from the truth.
Well, it's very similar to what Michael Savage says 3 to 5 after this show. Every day I hear him say he is the top rated talk show in all of New York City, which includes our competition. First off, he's not even the top rated talk show here at WABC. That fake, phony, fraudulent, liar, Pinocchio, kya-kya-down that he is. And nobody takes him to task except for me because in the same way.
What's going on between you two? I feel like the man in the middle. What's going on between you two guys?
Dominic, if we break down the numbers, he's lying. Now, our suits, they don't challenge him.
Well, you know that half the people on radio lie every single day about their ratings.
Half?
No, okay, 90%.
Okay, we're like politicians. We lie a lot. I will be the first to admit.
No, I've never heard you lie about your ratings.
You haven't been with me every day. And guess what? Luckily, nobody brought it up. But in the same vein, Michael Savage says it's like every other day. Oh, top-rated talk program in New York. You know, that's talking about our competition, Rush. He's more rated than Rush over at WR. More rated than our colleagues here at WABC. Let me tell you something. John Batchelor from 9 to 1 has better ratings than Michael Savage. You got that, Savage? John Batchelor and his show has better ratings per capita, per person, than you do, you liar, you kya-kya-down.
Okay, let's move on. Let's move on.
No, we don't need to move on.
Let's move on.
Just to show you, it's in the water. It's in the atmosphere. People like
Trump,
to lie.
Trump.
What's the
Trump.
Same? Savage and
okay, Trump.
Trump. Same thing. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Sliwa.
Curtis
Sliwa.
77 WABC. Senator Durbin also made the same accusation against a Republican leader in a meeting with President Obama and said that it was he chewed out the president. It was so disrespectful to President Obama, we couldn't even have the meeting. That's what he said in 2013. Later that day, the president's own press secretary came out and said, and I quote, it did not happen.
Who knew that Frank Perdue, the chicken man, became U.S. Senator in
Wait
Georgia?
A minute. Don't you mean David Perdue?
You mean it's not the chicken man, Frank Perdue?
David Perdue. Not the same guy.
Well, the reason I mentioned Frank Perdue is I figured I'd get a rise out of you because he so resembled the man that you had this bro love for, Ed Koch. You do remember that, right?
And what?
Just mentioning it.
Yeah, Ed Koch and I started out as foes, but towards the end of his life, we grew to be good friends.
So you were foul towards one another at first, and then you became very dear cumbadichiches.
He was, to me, an outstanding person.
By the way, I believe, and make yourself useful here, Justin B. Love, you hipster invader from Alabama. I believe David Perdue, before he became U.S. Senator in Georgia, was the head of Reebok. Could you double check that, please? Anyway, let's go to the phones, and I believe it's Maria who's on the line from New York. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Marie?
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Maria.
I'm calling because I feel that he's always on the defensive. No matter what he says, it's not going to matter. If he dropped the D while he was speaking, it's become an issue. Okay? And I think you kind of know that he's not hanging out with Kim Jong-un. All right? So, I mean, you know, he feels like he's always got to justify everything that he says.
But Maria, don't you expect better of your president, of our president?
It's not a matter of a better. We elected a New Yorker who has a way, an attitude. We like it, we don't like it, but we put him in office, and this is what we expect. I'm not expecting him to be, you know, a proficient orator and get up there.
All right, but Maria, okay, so he said, he could have cleaned it up and say, why are we encouraging people to come from poor and impoverished countries who are not going to contribute to our society? That might be his opinion. But why did he then say, how come they're not coming here from Norway? I mean, this guy is a stunad. There's no reason people are going to come here from Norway. They live in a socialist country in which they're taken care of from the cradle to the grave.
I get it. But the fact remains is that's his point. Why aren't we encouraging people from other countries?
You mean to tell me we should be sending government agents over to Oslo, set up little encampments in which we're recruiting Norwegians, the squareheads who love Fisker Ball and Lutefisk and riding reindeers around in sleighs, to come live in America, right?
No, how about that our economy, our people, our country just entices them to make them want to come and at least see what we're all about.
You know what we need here? The biggest industry growth is in America now? Healthcare, home health care. Do you think any of these Norwegians, the blonde hair, blue eyed Norwegians who are fully taken care of in Norway, are going to be coming over to change bedpans and handling our mothers and fathers in their homes with dementia and Alzheimer's? You really think they're going to fill that need?
Well, I mean, haven't we had that before? I think I seem to remember, I mean, I'm a little bit old enough to remember that we did have that culture coming here and doing that for our people. And they were wonderful at it.
Yeah. I tell you what. Let's do a test, Maria.
Okay.
Let's put ads in the Norwegian newspapers advertising that we need their citizens to come over and be home health care attendants to change bedpans, turn our parents over in the bed, and deal with dementia and Alzheimer's. Huh? Let's see how many takers we have from reindeer land. How freaking naive people are.
Oh, no.
Norwegians are banging down the door to come here.
Oh, no, but they're the good people. They're the people that
wanted.
You know why? I'm trying to avoid. Trying to avoid it. Oh, they're the good people. They're not like the Haitians. They're not like the blacks from Africa.
You know what the tip
they're
is?
They're not from El Salvador. They're the good people.
You know what
the
tip
people.
Is about Trump? For years, he denied being German. Because let's face it, you grow up in New York, you say you're German, particularly Jews are going to look at you. That's why I don't buy a Beamer or a Benz or even buy Bayer aspirin. Forget about it. So he perpetuated this notion that his father, Fred, was Swedish and his mother was Scottish, but said his father was Swedish until journalists said, no, your real name is Trump. German, we've located the village where your father, Fred, and his family were from. Why do you keep saying you're Swedes? So clearly, even though obviously Germany is predominantly white, he didn't want to be perceived of as German because that wasn't top shelf five star. He wanted to be a Swede.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Stop.
like Led Zeppelin. A little Headbangers Ball.
I like this song.
Stairway to Heaven. But this is their immigrant song. And if you listen to the words, they're talking about the trek that the Norsemen, that's right, from Norway, the Vikings took to come to the New World. I'm surprised they didn't claim in the song that Eric the Red and Leif Erikson discovered the New World and not Christopher Columbus or, as the Irish think, St. Brendan the Navigator.
You could understand what he was saying?
Yeah.
Really?
You know how many times I listened to that? Both in a
drug-induced
both in a drug-induced psychosis and sane and sober. That's a great song. But
I like the beat.
It's really about...
I can't understand what he's saying, the Norsemen. I understand the beat.
It's about the Norsemen. It's about the Vikings from Norway.
Okay.
So what does Trump want? The ancient Norsemen, you know, to actually come down from Valhalla and once again get into their longboats and row across the Atlantic Ocean and maybe land in Newfoundland?
I got a question for you. New Brunswick? Do you think it's a coincidence that the president singled out one country for positive immigration and then knocked the others? Do you think that's a coincidence?
No, because if you look at the population of Norway, most are blonde hair, blue eyed. It's one of the whitest countries in the world, and it has not had large migrations of immigrants, legal or illegal, Sweden has.
So I got another question. Why would we need more people from Norway? Why? Why? Why?
This way we can have more white people here.
I'm glad you said it.
Well, I mean, it's kind of obvious. But then I found a YouTube video of an adversary of mine.
Really?
Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo the First.
Oh, the man is dead.
Yeah, but actually listen to his words, because he's talking about immigration and how his peeps from Italy were treated upon their arrival.
The way I described it was a fictional interview on Ellis Island of my mother. What's your name? Immacolata Giordano Cuomo. Where are you from? Tremonti. How old are you? 25. Do you have any money with you? No, maybe a few dollars. Are you educated? No, not really. Do you have any skill, any job? No. Where are you going to meet my husband? Where is he? In New Jersey. Does he have a job? No, but he makes ifosa. What is that? Trenches. Oh, he's a ditch digger. Yes. Well, what do you have? I mean, well, we have nothing much except one child. You have no money, no skill, no friends, no job. Your husband's a ditch digger. You have one child. What did you come here for? Well, we came because over there was worse. And what do you expect of this country with the little you brought us? Well, not much. Just one thing. Before I die, I'd like one of my sons to be governor of the state of New York.
Now, do we really believe that he said that to the Immigration and Naturalization Service officer at Ellis Island?
Well, he's quoting his mother.
Yeah, but I believe most of that, but I don't believe that last tagline. She probably didn't even know there was a governor of the state of New York. Come on. You think my grandfather, Fidelio Bianchino, who took the same route from Bari with Nicoletta Bianchino, knew there was a governor of the state of New York at that time?
But there's a bigger point that Governor Cuomo was making, and you know the point, and that is, are we becoming a country, obviously America can't take in everyone, but are we becoming a country that based on the color of your skin determines whether or not you're going to get in?
What would have been a fairer statement by Mario, because of the division in Italy, where the northern Italians, whiter, not as olive skin, think they're Austrian and German if they're closer to the Alps, like Trieste and Trent, hate southern Italians even to this day, and how they felt they should have been preferred on the list, a northern Italian, if they decided to make the voyage and come to America, than a ditch-digging southern Italian like Mario Cuomo's family came from, or my family came from on my mother's side, Francesca. See, then you really get into the heart of the matter. Two separate Italies, the north, where they were pretentious, and in the south, where they viewed them as being the Mexicans of that time. Anyway, let's go to the phones if we can. Marion, who's calling from New Jersey, welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak to you, Curtis. My father came here after the Holocaust. He survived it, barely. And this country, I think most people are forgetting, is based on open arms, welcoming everybody. Has nothing to do with where you're from, the color of your skin, what you do for a living, or how much money you have. And I think these people that call and They don't want these people here. It's obvious. It's blatantly obvious. And our president doesn't. And I'm the same age as the president. I'm from Brooklyn originally, and I remember him back then, and he was no different. He was terrible. And this is who we have for our president. And when she says, well, this is who we voted for, not me. No. I miss President Obama.
Yeah, but Marion, hold on a second. Hold on. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because when the president talks about chain migration, he's absolutely right. You shouldn't be able to come here, establish roots, and then invite in your grandparents, your parents, your cousins, your nieces, your nephews,
yes,
all 58 members of your extended family, which sometimes happens. And why do we have a visa lottery? I mean, why? Why do we have? We got more than enough people who want to come in. Why do we have to have a lottery? Why not just set per country, per area, okay, this is what we're going to do in terms of when you come in, and what can you contribute to us here in America? Do you have a sponsor? Like my grandfather had to have a sponsor in order to bring his family here, and others had to, even though they didn't have two nickels to rub together, two lira, and he was a ditch digger with no skills and no education. But somebody had to sponsor him while he was here to say, if he can't pay his bills, him and his family of 13, then we'll have to underwrite his bills, because there was no social network system back then for him to fall into. That's sort of changed. There is still sponsorship, but you don't see it being accentuated. Why not have sponsors, right?
You may be right on the merits of your argument. And certainly most Americans can't disagree with what you just said, Curtis. But our president, with this latest comment, and I'm leaving open about whether that term was used, he's just so graphic and so divisive.
Well, maybe what he meant, Dominic.
Wait, Curtis. The reason why I have to stop you there.
Yes.
Do you realize what you just said? And it's what he meant.
Well,
it's the president of the United States.
I know that.
The president of the United States says exactly
that.
What he means.
But you see,
it's not open to interpretation.
No. Because he's big on ending chain migration, which I understand. And let's face it, if Norwegians come over...
Are you sure that's the only thing he's big on?
No.
Because based on that comment, it sounds like he's big on whites coming here, but everybody else, the door is closed.
But chain migration, if they're coming from Norway, would mean it's probably maybe a father, a mother, and half a kid, because they can't even equal their population any longer. When he speaks of Haiti or El Salvador or parts of Africa, African countries, they have huge families. So when he wants to end chain migration, he's basically saying, because I don't want 24 over here... or more, because in Norway, a whole village might consist of just 24, and none of them are your relatives, so you can't bring them over, because there's more reindeer than people there. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's quickly go to the phones. Dominic Carter in the house. It's Bobby calling from Freeport, Long Island. Welcome to WABC, Bobby.
This is Keyport, New Jersey. It's Bobby.
Yeah, well, you see, we have someone who's geographically challenged, the hipster invader from Alabama, Justin B. Love. I apologize, Bobby.
Good afternoon, okay. Bobby. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to know how come nobody talks about the no-go zones in Europe, in Germany, France, talk about Denmark. All their tax money is going to taking care of the immigrants. The country's going broke. It's a big problem. It's going to be our problem here. We're going to have no-go zones here, just like they have over there. They're losing their countries. Wake up.
All right, but it doesn't. It doesn't necessarily mean that what's happened, and you're right. Like if you go to Gothenburg in Sweden, where I've been, they now have a bridge that connects it to Copenhagen in Denmark. There are areas in which the immigrants won't allow the police to come into their area. Most of them are from like North Africa or the Balkans. Outside of Paris, where I've been, same thing. Not so much England. I think that was a bit exaggerated. But definitely Sweden, and definitely outside of Paris. And in Germany, where that's been a problem, where a lot of the immigrants that they've allowed in have rebuffed the police, won't cooperate with the police, and in fact, when they see them in their neighborhoods, they give them grief. So clearly we can learn from those mistakes of just allowing anybody to come in without any vetting, which is what Merkel in Germany did as leader of the European Union, who said, andale, andale, come on in. And what people don't realize is they needed labor in Germany because the Germans weren't going to do the manual labor anymore.
But that's not what the president talked about. He talked about a policy of letting good white people in and keeping people of color out. It's as simple as that.
Does that mean, how about this? How about we take the whites from Appalachia and Kentucky who are now going to have to go out and work 20 hours a week to get their Medicaid and swap them for the Norwegians? What do you think, huh? What do you think? We're going to discuss that up next, Dominic. Kentucky is the first to say you are Medicaid and you're able-bodied. You're going to work for it.
Curtis Lewa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of the Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
And you're too old to work, too old to work. When you're too old to work, and you're too young to die, who will take care of you? How'll you get by when you're too old to work and you're too young to die?
7 minutes after the hour of two, Dominic they Carter in the house. And Dominic, since we're talking extremes of black and white today on Martin Luther King Jr.'s federal holiday, as we have about what the president said about Haiti, El Salvador, African countries, juxtaposition versus the people he wants coming here, the squareheads from Norway, where 90% of the population is white and most of those are blonde hair, blue eyed. We have another situation that is similar as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast. And I might add, the hawk is talking. Oh, man, it's cold out there. Better put on the extra pairs of union underwear. You know, with that flap in the back, the long union underwear. So when you cop a squat on the porcelain palace, it's a lot easier. But it's cold. But NJDiet.com has made this broadcast to all of you possible. Now, we look across America at the 50 states and the territories, and we say some of them are extraordinarily white in comparison to others. You think first and foremost of Utah, the Mormon state, where Mitt Romney is now basically signaling to everyone, you know, I'm cancer-free, had my prostate out, I'm ready to run for Orrin Hatch's seat, which could give the president a lot of agita, you know, having Romney there, no friend of Trump, and vice versa. But then the other state that is predominantly white in a heavy way is Kentucky. And Kentucky is a good example because, Dominic Carter, you have old school Mitch McConnell, who loves to take a bath in gin and bourbon every day, like the other old timers in Kentucky. And then you have Rand Paul, Ron Paul, who is a new jack. In the fact that he is, as an ophthalmologist, a doctor too, knowing that he oversees a state in which the number one cash crop is no longer tobacco, it is weed. And boy, do they harvest that weed there in Kentucky. And let's face it, Rand Paul has sought to decriminalize the use both for medical and recreational use. So it's two different generations. But now that Trump initially signaled when he was running for president that he would alter the rules for qualifying for Medicaid, especially since Obamacare, the enrollees, many of them have gone straight to signing up for Medicaid, Kentucky has stood up and said, we will be the first state in which if you have signed up for Medicaid recently and you are not physically impaired, you're going to have to go out and work. Maybe give us 20 hours a week, 80 hours for the month in order to qualify for your Medicaid, whether you use it or you don't use it, but you're on the rolls. And this reminds me of Michael Mbatichich, if you remember, the guy you had a love-hate relationship with.
That's right, your boy, Rudy Giuliani,
who said, you know, why is it when you use your token, back then it was tokens, to get into the subway, and you're at the last stop, and you get into a train, it's like, it's horrible. It's like sticky floors, garbage everywhere. you know, it's not being cleaned up for the few minutes that it stays there before it has to depart and go back and pick up its passengers. And remember, he said, if you're going to qualify for welfare and you're able-bodied, man or woman, you're going to spend 20 hours a week as a web worker for the MTA assigned to the last station, and you're going to go on there with a mop and a broom, and you're going to clean it up before the doors close and take the passengers in the opposite direction. And I thought that was a great program. And then naturally what happened, Bloomberg discontinued it, let it phase out, and de Blasio will have no part of it. But I think this idea in Kentucky, which is the first to say, you get Medicaid, you've signed up under Obamacare, in which the rolls have really skyrocketed, and you're able-bodied, you got to work 20 hours a week doing some kind of work that benefits the community.
It sounds like a good idea on the surface, but there are several alarming things as it relates to workfare, if you will, for Medicaid. One, there has to be a consistent policy across the board. I covered Giuliani with his workfare. The positive, you could say, welfare numbers dropped down tremendously.
Yes.
And he changed the name of welfare centers, as you well know, to workfare centers.
Yes.
So he did a top-to-bottom change. Mm. Welfare rolls came down greatly. But now we're talking about something else. We're talking about someone's health. So it has to be the same rules for everybody. Because under workfare, certain communities didn't have to do it. It was quietly kept, a secret, but...
No, can I say what you will not say?
No.
Orthodox Jews, Hasidic Jews, many of whom have been on the welfare tabs for years because they're too busy davening, too busy studying Torah and Talmud to go out and work a job to support their
family.
The
only point that I'm making, you can't have 70% of the city out there doing workfare and 30% of the city excused from it and excluded. That's not fair.
But that's why I think it's good that Kentucky was the first state with close to 90% of its population being white. Not a lot of people of color. And a lot of those whites are what we call the three-eyed cousin fornicators in their trailer camps. Really poor whites from Appalachia. But, I mean, really poor.
No, I get it. But then there's the second issue, as we found out under workfare with Giuliani. He was so strong in his opinion, he even mandated college students to do workfare.
And they should.
No, I don't agree with that.
Whoa.
I don't agree with that at all. If you're in college and you're keeping your grades up, you're there to get an education to better yourself down the road.
Wait a second. How many college students? I didn't go to college. You did. But how many college students have to take part-time work just to subsidize their college education?
This is true. This is true. But it just seems...
So,
morally,
for instance,
wrong.
If you qualify for welfare and you're a college student, I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that puts you right in the groove to get a Pell Grant because of your income level.
Yes, it
and
does.
And you know how the Pell Grants have been abused.
But here's my point. If you're a student struggling to make it in school,
right,
and you're barely holding on, and now you have no choice but to do 20 hours workfare to maintain your medical benefits, is that the best way that we're using taxpayer dollars?
Let's find out from our many listeners, because I'd like to see it here in New Jersey, that's for sure. And the Democrats will fight that all the way. They'll have lawsuit after lawsuit against that. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Now, the specificity of Kentucky's program, first in the nation, will be that it exempts medically frail individuals, such as people with cancer, blood clotting disorders, or alcohol or substance abuse disorders? I would say no. If you have an alcohol or substance abuse disorder and you're receiving rehab through Medicaid, you need to get out there and work as part of your rehab. What's wrong with that? You're not so impaired physically that you can't move a broom, pick up some trash along a roadway. I don't understand that. And Kentucky state officials made it clear that the work requirements were aimed squarely at the newly eligible Medicaid enrollees, obviously, who got on because the Democratic governor there expanded the rolls per Obamacare. I would say, no, not just the newly eligible. Let's look at those who were already on the Medicaid rolls to see if they're not impaired. And if they're not impaired, 20 hours a week.
But there's also the other element. As I'm sitting here listening to you and thinking about this, and we have to be honest and call it what it is. you do have a responsibility to taxpayers if you're receiving a service benefit of taxpayers. But it's also embarrassing for people that are forced to do workfare. Everyone knows who they are, including the people that are walking by. And that's why it has to be one consistent policy.
Motivation, you can't, you motivation to get off of workfare.
Okay, well, you're looking at it as half full. I guess I'm looking at it as half empty.
I'll give you an example. Yesterday, as you know, if you go to the Curtis Lewa Facebook page, I have a dilemma. My two youngest sons I was able to visit for the first time since I had the operation. Because they had seen me in a very impaired state, and so their mother, rightfully so, said, wait till you're up and at them, because, boy, they were traumatized by you. You were in a fetal position the last time, screaming, and they still can't get over that. So we waited until I was in good shape. And she talked about, because they go to public schools, how they get a free lunch now. You know, everybody gets a free lunch. And I said to my sons, how do you like the lunch, the free lunch? They said, we hate it. Nobody likes the lunch, so we all dump it in the trash. Everybody. So you say to them, well, how does that help? So all this good food goes into the trash. The custodian schleps it out to be picked up, to be taken to a landfill, you know, somewhere in West Virginia or Kentucky, where they could use that food because of all the poor and impoverished people in West Virginia and Kentucky. And so that some kid doesn't have the stigma that they have a swipe card and they get a free lunch. How does that make sense, Dominic?
It doesn't, but you, and I know you get it. You have to be in a position. They say never judge a person until you walk a day in their shoes. You have to be in a position where you're the victim of that stigma to understand it. And I know you get it.
I understand, but you know something? In life, that's the way it is when you become an adult. There are the haves and the have-nots, and when you get something on the cuff, you get something for free. How is there a stigma attached to that? Because somebody else is paying for it.
It's a stigma because, for example, if you're in the highway unit, people are driving by, they recognize you. You know that only workfare people are out there. It's embarrassing. You don't think it's embarrassing?
Well, you know something? If you happen to be stuck on Rikers and you're part of the work program in which you got to clean up trash along the Grand Central or the Van Wyck, your homies might see you out there, you know, in your orange jumpsuit, you know, with your Department of Correction logo on the back. I don't want them casting aspersions against you, right? Get out of here. Get out there and work. Let's go to, I believe it's Jimmy who's calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC, Jimmy.
Hey, my friend Curtis and Dominic. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Jimmy. We're well. Wait, Curtis, how do you say I've been better. Is that the way you say? I've been better.
I've had better days.
I've had better days.
Actually, these are better days than the last 2.5 years.
You look like
$1 million.
Thank you. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I'm glad to hear, Curtis, that you are feeling better. Well, before I make my point, I'm still waiting for you. I know you probably need to heal up a little bit more before you come out on my garbage route.
Oh, no. That's going to happen. We'll wait for the warmer months and until I'm fully recuperated, because right now I'm not permitted to bend over and pick up anything more than 5 pounds in my recovery.
Okay. No rush, but okay. We'll definitely keep that on the docket. Anyway, I don't know if you're aware, Kurt. You probably are, but let me just throw this by you. A single issuance adult, male or female, does not matter. A single issuance adult is entitled to $123.50 twice a month, every 2 weeks. Now, in order to receive that money, you do have to do some form of back-to-work program at a minimum of 20 hours a week, which is obviously part-time. But it's amazing how many able-bodied 30 years and older men that are probably in better shape than me and you, Curtis, that just absolutely refuse and try to find every kind of loophole not to do it. They want it for nothing.
Oh, yeah. How many times I've heard people, young men especially, some young women say, what do you think, I'm a slave? I say, hold on. Well, you're not a slave or an indentured servant. This happens to be something you do in return for benefits you receive, because guess what? We're paying for those benefits.
That's right.
I hear you, Jimmy, and I hear you, Curtis. And, you know, Jimmy's correct. There are people that will come up with any excuse to avoid workfare. Mm. My only point is that it has to be one consistent policy for everybody.
Yes.
No, it doesn't work that way. There are exclusions that the public never hears about.
No, I would agree with you.
And, there are certain groups that are never forced
to get out there.
Were
you saying the Orthodox and the Hasidic?
No, those are your words. But those
well,
are the,
I'll say it.
There are certain
groups.
They're
too busy davening, studying Talmud and Torah.
There are certain
groups. They have 13 kids, and they're all getting snaps, food stamps, and they're on welfare. You're absolutely right.
There are certain groups that you will never, ever see them out there. That's not fair to everybody else.
You know what? I need to study the Old Testament, and I need to study the New Testament.
Rabbi Carter and, Reverend Carter and Rabbi Sliwa?
No, Reverend Carter.
Right. Amen.
And priest, Curtis. I'll be a priest as much as I'm an AMP Catholic.
And we'll open a church together?
Yeah, we'll open a church of what's happening now. And we'll study all day. Meantime, we'll keep having kids. We'll get our snap cards.
Wait, am I the man or are you the woman or...
Doesn't really matter.
Doesn't
nowadays.
Really matter.
Daddy has two mommies, whatever the hell. Doesn't really matter. The point being is, you're right. If you get benefits and you don't have physical limitations, I don't want to see people out there with physical limitations, but a lot of them are physically fit. You got to do some work. And it could be all you're doing, you're in a senior citizen center, helping the seniors, 20 hours a week. You're cleaning out the stairwells of a NYCHA housing project because we know all the blunts that are being turned out, right? All the tobacco on the ground there, it needs to be cleaned. Whatever it is, there's always work to be done in this city because it's so dirty. It's so filthy. I mean, simple manual labor doesn't require a big skill level. And who knows? Maybe it'll end up quantifying you or qualifying you for a job.
And that's actually happened.
Yes.
In some cases.
Yes. Yeah. And think of it now. When you take the subways and you're at the last stop, how many MTA workers who are like getting $36.50 who are maintenance workers, I think, an hour, how many do you see there with the mops swabbing the deck and, mucking out the cars before they have to go back into service? Sometimes you see them. Most times you don't.
As we saw under Giuliani, the unions are going to scream bloody murder. And to point to the corruption that goes on in the past.
Yes.
I actually know women. Basically, if you were a mother to a toddler, you didn't have to do work for you until the child was a little older.
Right.
I know women that will time out getting pregnant.
Yep.
So that they can avoid and make sure they have this kid X amount of years to avoid the work.
Are you suggesting we tie their tubes?
No, I'm not going there today.
Oh, okay.
Not going there today.
That's the only guarantee because, let's face it, if you decide you're going to fornicate and copulate and you're fertile, you're going to be popping out babies.
But maybe, I believe it was Wisconsin, maybe Wisconsin was onto something when they said, we'll pay for two public assistance.
Yes.
After that, good luck. You're on your own.
Yeah. No, it has to be reined in. 1-800-848-WABC. Or remember the game that Christine Todd Whitless knew nothing about.
With Christine Todd Whitman? What did you
Whitless,
say? Whitless.
The patrician that she was. Diamonds in the Crown. When the brothers would sit around in the hood in the projects and say, hey, just have another kid on the way, another diamond in my crown. Don't worry, I'll be there at the end of the month. I'm going to collect my smacks. And you know what that is. To the phones we go. Dominic Carter, it's Ron from Edison. Welcome to WABC, Ronnie.
Hey, Curtis. Hey, Dominic.
Hi, Ron.
Hi. Not for nothing, but, if you're on a government assistance program, you're supposed to be embarrassed. It's supposed to be embarrassing so that you get the hell off of it.
Wait, Ron, I'm a little confused. People need help. Some people abuse the system. But why should you be embarrassed? Why? To make others feel good?
If you're collecting welfare generationally, like a lot of these
people... Wait. Now you just changed it. You just said generationally. Your initial premise was if you're receiving public assistance. Now, I agree with you that people should not receive welfare. As somebody that grew up on welfare, I'm saying this, that it shouldn't go from one generation to the next. But why should people be forced to feel embarrassed? That's not right.
Can I tell you both Ron and Dominic, who was not embarrassed when they got SNAPs and welfare? When LBJ opened up our country to Russian Jews, who were escaping the old Soviet Union, many of whom knew nothing about their religion. I know more about Torah and Talmud as a Gentile than they did. They flooded into the country. Not all of them, but quite a few of them. And they would show up with mink coats on. and they would fill up their shopping carts at the local Walbombs with prime meats and the best quality food you can get. And then they'd pull out those food stamps, and they would show knots of food stamps to everyone while they had those diamonds that were mined in Siberia glistening on their hands. And you would be outraged. You would say, what? We let them into our country. They get SNAPs, they get welfare, they get housing allowance, they get college education for their kids, and they flaunt it by rolling in with a Mercedes or a Beamer into the parking lot. I see them filling up shopping bag after shopping bag in the back, and then they're online there, and they're talking up a storm in Russian, and they're having a good old time while we're counting nickels, dimes, and pennies. We got to put products back because we can't afford it. You don't think that caused a lot of people to flip their script?
Of course. I've been to the supermarket. You know I live in Pomona.
Yep.
And I've been to the supermarket where somebody before me happens to be using food stamps, and I got to stand there and wait forever while they take... But remember, I come from a single-parent family household situation.
Right, but you...
I don't think it's right to embarrass people and shame people because they need welfare.
You know something? Man, when you got to eat... As opposed to being embarrassed? How many people say, gee, I don't want to be embarrassed. I'd rather starve. No. That sirloin steak you just grabbed there? Guess what? All of a sudden, you're no longer embarrassed any longer.
So I rode the subway this morning.
Yes.
I saw a Latino woman. She was playing with her daughter, doing school stuff on the train. Let's just say for argument's sake, she's receiving public assistance.
Yes.
I don't think that she is. On the 3 train, I had just left Sharpton's event this morning. Your boy,
yeah,
Reverend Sharpton.
Mm-hmm.
So should she feel bad about herself because she's trying to do the right thing with her daughter?
No. No.
So, I mean, so why should she be embarrassed?
It's not like she walks around with a scarlet letter with a big W on that says, I'm a welfare mom. Most of us would never know that. But anyway, up next, this is a freaking outrage. A firefighter of the city of New York gets caught bringing fentanyl in from Red China. Is arraigned by a judge. He says it's for resale, not for personal use, even though he's a dope fiend. They send him to a rehab in the Poconos. A rehab in the Poconos while selling fentanyl in the streets.
Referential treatment.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
Find your...
242, Dominic Carter in the house. And I have... fire streaming out of my nostrils on this one. You talk about a double standard in our criminal justice system. Let's look to Staten Island, the Forgotten Island, or as some have called it, Satan Island. But one thing we can agree on, Staten Island has had a hell of a difficult time with its opioid crisis. That includes not only the Oxys, Percocet, Vicodin, the other drugs.
Maybe hit the hardest. Maybe.
Yeah, per capita per person. The South Bronx and Staten Island are like they vie one and two together.
Yes.
And naturally, when they crack down on the script from doctors, a lot of the users then reverted to the streets for heroin and fentanyl. Fentanyl, which the Red Chinese manufacture in laboratories and factories and ship here in the bellies of the ships. Oftentimes, as they're laid up outside of the Straits of the Verrazano, waiting to come in through the Arthur Kill, the Kill Van Call, to unload the fentanyl with other items in the belly of their ship right there in the port of Newark, Elizabeth. Okay, so we have a city firefighter. Apparently, he signed up late in his life. He's 45. He served 4 years, I believe, in the Lower East Side. He was actually assigned to Ladder 11 in the East Village. I mean, there are some firefighters at the age of 45 who are retiring because, you know, they've done their 20 years and they're out, half pay, full benefits for them and their families for the rest of their life. And they own an ice cream shop down in Port St. Lucie in Florida, and they get two incomes. Okay, not this guy. He gets dragged out of his house right before the start of the weekend after a comprehensive investigation by the United States Postal Inspector Service, the Department of Homeland Security, and the U.S. DEA. Why? Because he has decided to purchase with Bitcoin fentanyl from Red China, Shanghai. Well, they advertise it. Well, you know, it's like, remember Trump was going to go over there. He was going to tell President, who's on first, I don't know who's on second, what's on third. You better stop with this fentanyl because it mostly comes from China. So they delivered 23 grams of fentanyl to his house. The postal inspector is on it. Once he receives it, they bust him. When they're sweating him down and asking him, what are you going to use this for? Because, man, you look like a dope fiend and junkie yourself. Yeah, he's I got a habit. But I was going to resell it. I was going to be a pusher and sell the fentanyl in the streets to subsidize my habit. Now I'm saying to myself, okay, you're going for arraignment. Man, you're clearly either going to be a big bail over your head and eventually you're going to face some jail time. Because this fentanyl, I'm coming off withdrawal of fentanyl where I was given that morphine after my operation on December 13th. It's 10 times more powerful than morphine, 50 times more powerful than heroin. And it's a killer. We've seen that.
50. 50 so, times more than heroin.
Right. So this city firefighter has his liar for hire, his lawyer next to him. And he goes before the Brooklyn Federal Magistrate Judge Stephen Gold.
Wait a minute. What did you call his lawyer?
Liar for hire, spin doctor.
That's what you call lawyers?
Well, in this case, because this guy was like lying through his teeth.
Okay, all right.
But instead of Gold, the federal magistrate in the Eastern District getting upset with this firefighter, Anthony Marino of Staten Island, he decides to scold the federal prosecutors for taking longer than the required 48 hours to bring Marino before a judge. That guy has bought fentanyl and brought it in from Red China with Bitcoin. And then instead of either remanding him to jail or setting an outrageous bail to guarantee that he's not going to be a flight risk, he says, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. This is your lucky day, firefighter Marino, because you're a hero. You're a firefighter. You're a brave man. You're a great man. He says, great effing man in court.
You're turning red. Calm down.
The guy's bringing in fentanyl to sell in the streets. You're a great effing man because you're a firefighter. So he establishes bond at $100,000 and then remands him not to home incarceration for his next court day, but to a rehab center in Pennsylvania in the Poconos. He says, oh, you're not right for incarceration. You may be too affected by the drugs in your system to understand me, the federal magistrate says. You got to stay there in the Poconos, sweat it out, rehab. I want to see you clean and sober in a few months. This can be the day that saved your life. And I'm saying to myself, what?
But isn't this what we want from our judges? Don't we want, don't look at me like that. Don't we want everyone that has a drug problem to get help? Clearly, to think that you're going to purchase fentanyl from China and get away with it clearly shows that you have a tremendous problem.
Right, but Dominic, he had acknowledged it wasn't for self-use.
Right, to sell.
He was going to resell it.
Addicts do drastic things.
In the streets of Staten Island, which already has a significant problem per capita per person, and God only knows, maybe even outside of Ladder 11 in the East Village where there is a demand for fentanyl in the streets, because I've seen the dope fiends scouring around. Boy, they want fentanyl. It's like, forget heroin.
No, I hear you, but I think we can agree the average person does not look to purchase this from China, right? Because we know that the feds are going to let it go through. The moment you accept the package, they're going to move in and make the arrest.
But to be honest with you, Dominic, so much does get through. This is an exception to the rule. So let's find out from our many listeners out there. Should this firefighter be called a great man in court who deserves the slack of going to rehab? Or because he brought in fentanyl to sell in the streets, he should be doing jail time. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And remember that famous scene in the old Soprano series when Tony and Paulie Walnuts and the crew go visit Chrissy, who, because he was addicted to nose candy, cocaine, ended up getting assigned to that rehab in the Poconos? This is the kind of rehab I'd like to give this firefighter, Anthony Marino.
We are here to talk about you killing yourself with drugs, not my personality.
That's right.
I'm going to kill myself? The way you
Then you're going to have a heart attack by the time you're 50.
Oh, holy, sit down.
You're talking to the boss here.
Good, maybe someone will smack some sense into him.
Great, my own mother. You, you whore.
Oh,
yo, guys, guys, please, come on.
Can I go to this rehab clinic in the Poconos to give firefighter Anthony Marino the beatdown he should get for bringing fentanyl into our country to sell in the streets? Can I do that, please, Dominic?
No, he needs help. This young man, 45 years of age, he needs help. But I will say this. There has to be a fairness with our criminal justice system. You can't say that one is, oh, you're a firefighter, and so you get to go to Poconos for rehab while the brothers go to prison.
Yes. Let's quickly go to Tyke, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic here on WABC, Tyke.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm actually doing good. Thanks, Tyke.
I was saying a prayer for you, Curtis.
Thank you.
But I want to speak to Dominic. I mean, we're opening the door for an out on every broken law. I mean, like Senator Menendez, it's okay for him to take a trip to Costa Rica because he went with a friend. You know, it's okay to commit a crime in Newark because you grew up in a distressed area.
No, I hear what you're saying. I'm not saying that it's okay to commit these crimes. I am saying to you that people that are addicts need help, and there needs to be one consistent policy that impacts everyone. You cannot say to certain groups, you're going right to prison, don't pass go,
right,
and others, you're a great firefighter,
so,
you're a hero.
Yeah, let's make a poster child of Anthony Marino and make sure he gets time for bringing in the killer fentanyl from Red China to sell in the streets.